Good morning, and welcome to the New Life broadcast brought to you by the Emmanuel Baptist Church. We hope you'll listen in every Sunday at 9:30 on 93R. Emmanuel is located at 1710 23rd Street near the City Park in Parkersburg. If you have a question or desire more information, call us at 304-485-5171. Our website is www.ebcwv.com.
When I was in fifth grade, we had a teacher that specialized in alternative education. So everything that you normally did in a classroom, he didn't do it that way. So it only lasted 1 year, but we were kind of the guinea pigs for it. If you've been here long enough, you've heard this, but you could do whatever you wanted. You could, when you wanted to go outside for recess, you didn't have to wait for the teacher to tell you, you just went. This idea of a structured classroom with all the desks being in a certain way, he told us you can put your desk in whatever order you want them, however, wherever you want them. So you decide how you want, where you want to sit in the classroom. And I'll never forget, it was the first time that I can remember feeling on the outside looking in, because all these people that I kind of hung out with and I enjoyed being with, they all circled up their desks in this little village. And I was not in there, the little city. They even brought a mini fridge in. I mean, I thought, now they brought, how did they do that? They had their own little space, but I was on the outside looking in at these people that had circled their desks up and never asked me if I was to be included. So I looked at Spencer, and Spencer looked at me, and I said, well, let's make our own city. So we put our desks together, and for that year, we had our own two little desks together. First time I remember being just the gut feeling of being kind of on the outside and looking in and wondering how I got there. Today we're thinking about including others. And I want you to look just briefly at the banner. That banner was Mary Southall and I got together, and we wanted to honor Bob Southall, who, after he retired from DuPont, was known as the bread man. He took the day-old bread to all the agencies and ministries around the city, and they all got this bread, this perfectly good bread and pastries. And when Mary and I were talking about a banner to honor him, we remembered Matthew 25, I was hungry and you fed me. Bob looked for ways to serve and include people just in his life. And by the way, at the end, you and I are going to be asked, did you think about others? If someone was thirsty, did you give them something to drink? If someone was a stranger, did you invite them in? If someone was in prison, did you visit them? Jesus is going to ask that question at the end. Did you love others? Did you include others? So we're in a series in January on our vision of life. The banners on the side have been with the new sanctuary. The banners now reflect this, loving God, including others, fellowship groups, and everyone gifted and involved. Love is obviously key to all of these. Once we love God, we will instinctively look for ways to bring others in. We will also, if you love God, you're going to love his people. How can you love God and want to be around others who are seeking to follow him like you? We need support. We need encouragement. We need help. So fellowship is so important. And also, if you love God and he's gifted you with something, why would you keep that to yourself? How could you keep your gift, your ability, your talent, which was specifically given to you to benefit whatever fellowship you land in, how can you keep that to yourself? You don't want to bury it in the ground. You want to use it. So everyone gifted and involved. Last week we saw that love from 1 Corinthians 13, we saw that love was essential in that you could be religious and you could be appear godly, but if it's not based on love, then it's nothing. We learned that love is eternal, that faith is fulfilled and hope is realized, but love will go on. These relationships and the love that you're sharing here now is going to carry on into the heavenly kingdom. So love will carry on forever, and love is at the center of the universe, and heaven is full of love, so love is forever. And then we saw the essence of love, which actually speaks to today's topic, which is including others. The essence of love is that love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, is not proud or rude or self-seeking, not easily angered, keeps no record of wrongs, rejoices in the truth. Love protects, it trusts, it hopes, it perseveres. Love is sensitive, sacrificial, generous. It slows down, it listens, it leans in. Tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day, and a famous quote from Dr. Martin Luther King is, "Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." And he lived that in his life. Someone this week, we were talking, and he was responding to Sunday's sermon where I said that love means that you'll think about others and you'll treat them with kindness and respect, and you'll avoid ridiculing them or putting them down. And this person looked at me and said, "Is that really realistic? Really? Do you really expect people to live that way?" He said, "Because the real world, people go at one another, and coming into a political season where the negativity and everything is going to go way up." And so the question was a good one. Is that realistic? And the answer is no. It's not realistic or natural here, but it's the very life of heaven. And so if you want to give people a foretaste of what heaven is like, just learn to love, serve, and share. And you're showing people something that's counterintuitive, something that is not natural down here. And it sometimes it's hard to do. But the person said, is that realistic? Aren't you living in a dream world?" And I thought, yeah, I guess my mind is in heaven. And I guess the way people act in heaven is a way I'd like to act here and give people a foretaste of what it's like. So the second part of life is that we are to include others. And another thing I've said over the years, my grandmother spouted scripture constantly and always had a poem. And one of her favorite poems was Edwin Markham said, "He drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that brought him in." What kind of old woman is quoting that verse to a little kid? But I never forgot it. "But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that brought him in." Another quote that I love, and it's traced to a clergyman in Scotland in the 1800s, but it's, "Be kind. Everyone you meet is fighting a battle that you know nothing about." And that also helps me. It helps me to include people because everybody you meet is going through something. They're struggling with something. There's some residual trauma or difficulty that makes it hard for them to interact or relate to other people. And a lot of times they don't come across easy to connect to. So be kind despite their behavior, knowing that they may be fighting a battle that you know nothing about. Which, by the way, my earliest sense of God working in my life and my earliest sense of ministry was feeling feeling for people who I felt were being excluded or exploited or held up for ridicule. I don't know, do you remember how we used to choose up sides on the playground? And you'd have two captains. Usually they were the best athletes, or they were the popular kids, and they would be the captains, and then they would say, "Well, I want Busick, I want Lewis." And I was reasonably athletic, so I went early. But I'll never forget as a kid looking, and as you get down through, and you finally get to the kids that neither team wants, and then they begin to argue over who's got to take so and so. And I just remember looking at the faces of the kids that were not being picked. And they had this look of kind of resignation, and I don't know if other kids, where does that come from other than God? That I would even be concerned about the fact that they were not being included. They were being kind of held up, and look, they're not good. Nobody wants them. And then whenever there was someone in a lunchroom that was sitting by themselves, I don't know, my heart always went out to someone who was eating alone. Maybe they wanted to, but I would always go up and say, hey, can I, do you want somebody to eat with you? The Lord always drew me to people who I felt were being left out or being excluded. And I look back now and I realize, I think that's how God was beginning to develop in me a call to ministry. All the way back when I was a kid. And that didn't come from me naturally. I think that came from God working in my life. It's like Dr. Seuss and Horton Hears a Who. What is the phrase there? A person is a person no matter how small. A person is a person no matter how small. And we need to remember that as we think about including others. So kind of big picture, inclusion is big today. Words like tolerance, diversity, pluralism are big. DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Companies have spent millions of dollars to hire people who come into large companies to help them deal with diversity and equity and inclusion. Which, by the way, a Wall Street Journal article this week, big companies are having to cut back, and the DEI departments are the ones that are getting the cuts. I think people feel like maybe they've gone kind of far over to one side and coming back. CRT, critical race theory, won't get into it, but basically it's based on the idea that certain groups have always systemically been excluded, and we need to figure out ways to bring them back in, and there's a great debate over that. But there's a tension between inclusion and exclusion. And the tension is simply this: everyone is welcome. Everyone can come in. But if you come in, you have to be willing to exclude certain behaviors. It's not like you come into God's family and you say, hey, I'm here, and I don't plan, I am who I am, and I don't plan to make any changes. God says everyone's welcome. But by coming in, you're saying, I repent, and there's a process of renewal. So God says there's certain behaviors that are going to be excluded. If you happen to come to Emmanuel, and you have this nagging habit of stealing stuff from the office or from other people, and that kind of comes out as we're talking to you, hey, you're welcome to be here, and we will love you and support you. But we're going to ask you to exclude that behavior where you're taking stuff that's not yours. Or if you come to Emmanuel and you're a great person, but you just happen to have kind of a problem with anger, and for whatever reason, and we're having a business meeting, and someone questions you, and you get up and you tell them off the way you tell off anybody that crosses you, you would be included. You're welcome here at Emmanuel, but I would either stop you immediately in the meeting, or I would come to you afterwards and say, that is not how we do things here. You're welcome here. You're included here. But that behavior will be excluded because we don't yell at people. We don't ridicule people. We don't put people down. That's not how we do things. And so there's always a tension between God welcoming us in, but then asking us to become new creations in Christ. A song I learned back in youth group in Colorado years ago. We took kids to Colorado. But He loves you just the way you are today, but much too much to let you stay that way. And when He's changed your heart from what it was before, He will not love you one bit more. He loves you just the way you are today, but much too much to let you stay that way. And when He's changed your heart from what it was before, He's not going to love you one bit more. We're new creations in Christ. The old is leaving. The new is coming. And then the triangle of truth is just, we'll look at this again in the future, but Christ is, we first go to Christ at the top of the triangle. We know there's a created order that relates to how we function and how family works, but then there's also has to be compassion. In the midst of all of this world where a lot of people are not connected to Christ and a lot of people don't believe that there's a created order, we have to have a lot of love and compassion for people who don't get it. They're not with us. They don't do Bible. They don't do God. They don't do church. And so we have to love people where they are. So interesting to look at the Bible from the theme of inclusion and exclusion. I mean, it starts right in the beginning with Adam and Eve. They were included in a beautiful garden, weren't they? But then what happened? They sinned. I mean, they fell. And suddenly, God made it to include them and gave them everything they needed. But then they're excluded. Then Cain kills Abel, and he suddenly is a restless wanderer. He leaves the beautiful, safe space. And then God develops this people, calls them to himself through Abraham. And he said, if you will worship me alone, I will bless you, and I'll give you the promised land, and life will be good. But what did God's people do over and over again? They looked away. They worshiped false gods, and God said, I included you in the covenant. I included blessing, and now I'm going to exclude you. The way my mom, when she would tell me, when I had hurt one of my sisters, she would tell me, now you're going to your room. I love that. It's kind of torture. That was torture, but it's really, the beauty of it was it gave her a chance to cool down, and one time it gave me a chance to put on 9 pair of underwear. I'll never forget, we got spanked with a ping pong paddle, and I thought that was a genius idea. I was all loaded up, you know, and she spanked me as hard as she could, and I was like, Superman. You know? And she looked down, she goes, what are you doing? My sisters hated me after that because we got spanked on the back of our leg after that. But so, you know, even to mention that sounds like I had a mom who was a child abuser, but you know, I had a mom who said, you're welcome to be in this family, but you're not going to do things that hurt or harm other people. And if you do, that behavior is going to be excluded. And I'll bring a little bit of pain to bring that home. And something about that helped me to learn. Jesus comes on the scene. He opens a doorway into heaven, offers us forgiveness. He came to include us, to bring us into God's love. But we have to choose to believe in him by faith. And Jesus talked a lot about heaven, where people are included. He also talked a lot about hell. There's actually this possibility that you could live for yourself so much that when it's all over, you never really wanted God. And so God gives you what you always live for, and that's yourself. Hell is getting yourself forever, to be isolated and to be separate from something that was handed out to you, but you wouldn't take it. In fact, Revelation 22, it says, inside heaven there's light, love, and laughter. But right there in that last chapter of the Bible, it says, outside are those who practice magic arts, the sexually immoral, the murderers, the idolaters, and everyone who loves and practices falsehood. So there's this tension between inclusion and exclusion. Everyone is invited in, but if you come in, you gotta be open, because God has a plan and a purpose for your life, and he's going to move you maybe in ways that you need to change, and you're going to have to exclude some behaviors. So we must seek to include people inside the church. We need to seek to include people inside the church. And two passages here are, one is Acts 6. And if you remember there, the Greek-speaking Jews were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. And somebody came to the apostles and said, I don't think this is right that there should be a group of people that are getting less or no food. It's hard to believe that even in the early church, they would have people that were withholding or basically saying, well, we'll give the real Jews food, but not. But it says the apostles said, okay, we're going to take care of this. It says that they prayed over it, and then they delegated the job to gifted people who made it happen. And it said God brought his blessing upon them. So when the problem of exclusion came to the apostles, they didn't say, hey, get a thicker skin. They addressed it. They took care of it. They made sure that the people that were being excluded were brought in. And they even found specific people who were delegated. You make sure that these people get their allotment. So the early church took seriously including people. And in Galatians 2, 11 to 21, Peter used to hang out with the Gentiles. And then some Jews came along and said, wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to be pure? Aren't you supposed to stay away from people that are like outside the covenant? You're just hanging out with these people like they're okay? And it said that Peter pulled back, because the Jewish people said, hey, you're hanging out with the wrong people. It said Peter pulled back. And I would love a videotape of this, but it said that Paul admonished Peter to his face and said, this is wrong. You know about we're saved by grace through faith, and you're pulling back like we're saved by the law or by doing certain things. And so right there in the early church, Paul addresses Peter And he says in the context there, I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness could be gained through the law, Christ died for nothing. So within the church, we're called to include all people. In fact, Jesus said in John 13, after he had washed the disciples' feet, after he washed Judas' feet, just think about that. He knew what Judas was going to do. What does he say? He said, a new command I give you. Love one another. And he said, by this, all people are going to know that you're my followers if you show love one to the other. He said, that's how within the church you're going to love. You're going to include. You're going to be a model of heaven here on earth. So we include people inside the church. What about people outside? Jesus lived to include outsiders. So my Lord not only took care of the people within his group, but he looked outside. In Luke 4, Jesus announced his ministry. He quoted Isaiah 61. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. He's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Jesus said, I am the Messiah. Isaiah was writing about me, and I've come for outsiders and outcasts. Jesus came to reveal God's heart. And then there's the story in John 8 of the woman caught in the act of adultery. Let me just read that to you from John 8, 2 to 11. At dawn, Jesus appeared again in the temple courts where all the people gathered round him, and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. Which, by the way, raises the very obvious question, where was the man and why wasn't he brought in? The law of Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say? They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing Jesus. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. And when they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and he said, Let any of you that is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, he stooped down and he wrote in the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away, one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left, with the woman still standing there. And Jesus said, Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, sir, she said. Neither do I condemn you, Jesus declared. Go and leave your life of sin. So notice with me that the religious leaders were all about law and legalism, but Jesus was all about love. Notice that Jesus challenges everyone to remember that they're a sinner. We all sin in different ways. The woman had an issue with sexual sin. You and I might have an issue in another area, but everyone is a sinner. And notice that Jesus includes the woman by showing her compassion. Neither do I condemn you, but also his conviction that when you come to me, you're going to have to exclude certain behaviors. Her lifestyle was destroying her soul. So Jesus says, go. By the way, I always overlook the word now. Go now and leave your life of sin. Don't sit there and try to justify it. There's times when you need to get out. And Jesus was saying, you are involved in something. I love you and I include you, but you're involved in something with your lifestyle that is killing you, and you need to get out of it now. Know that I'm with you, that I support you, and I love you. You need to exclude that behavior so you can be all that I want you to be. But then the big thing that hit me, and I've shared this before, why did Jesus bend down? Why did Jesus bend down and write in the sand? The standard thing I've always heard in sermons is he wrote down maybe the Shema. We should love the Lord our God. Because they weren't acting in a loving way. Or he wrote down the name of the women that the Pharisees were sleeping with. We don't know what he wrote. But then the answer is so simple and so obvious. Why did Jesus bend down? Why was he down? Why was he down on this at this level? Because that's where the woman was. That's the woman was thrown at his feet. She was literally brought out to be ridiculed. And he was down in order to connect with her, to make eye contact with her, to basically look at her in love and say, I'm here for you. You're not alone. That's the key to inclusion. You get on the level. You lock eyes with him. He couldn't do that standing up. He had to, twice, he bends down in order for this person who was brought out to be traumatized, to see her face, to feel her emotions, he had to bend down and get close to her. And then I'll give you a homework assignment. Look up Luke 7, where another woman crashes a party, and she weeps at Jesus' feet and anoints his feet with perfume. And the Pharisees say, if this guy were a prophet, he would know that this woman is a prostitute and shouldn't be touching him. And Jesus tells a story, and basically the moral is the person who's been forgiven much loves much, but the person who gets forgiven little loves little. But then he has a great line that he looks at Simon the Pharisee and says, do you see this woman? That's the keeper phrase in Luke 7. Do you see this woman? And the answer is, yeah, Simon saw her, but he saw what she was. And Jesus saw what she was going to become. That's the beauty of love. The Pharisees looked at the past. She's a sinner. Jesus looked at her future. She's alive. She's alive by grace. And so as we go into another election year, I can tell you this. You're going to hear a lot of put downs, and you're going to hear a lot of people dwelling on the past. And I don't know about you, but I'm just to the point in my life where I don't need a lot more negativity. I just feel like there's got to be a way for us to engage in dialogue without you're going to see ad after ad where somebody has found something in their opponent's life that they think is horrible, and they're going to pay millions of dollars to make a very highly produced ad so that you can see how horrible this person is. I mean, they're just right above a demon of hell, and you should know that this person really shouldn't even be able to exist because they're a bad person. And we're going to see it over and over and over again, millions of dollars, to look at a person's past and to say they are a bad person. And yeah, maybe that's true. But I think of Jesus, and doesn't it just grate on your spirit? Shouldn't we be about something more, something better, something positive, something higher? At least see what's happening to us as we go into the season of put downs and as we go into the season of looking at the past. I wonder if God says, hey, let's not focus on the past, let's focus on the future. Let's not focus on the hate, let's focus on love. Someone told me this week it's unrealistic to share this kind of radical love that sees the best in people and not the worst. It's unrealistic to seek to build others up instead of tearing them down. They said it's unrealistic that there's a love that seeks to include rather than exclude. A love that calls people to be everything that God desires for them to be. And I'm thinking, you know, it may be unrealistic, but it's God's way. And I wonder if we need to recapture that. As we go into 2024, let's choose to go against the grain and at least acknowledge as you're seeing it what is happening, and that Christians are called to a different, higher, maybe counterintuitive, heavenly way. This week, I got something on the. Someone went on the website and hit contact us, and I got this note: please pray for me. I'm going through a bad time in my life. I'm so stressed out. I need Jesus. And I'm preparing the sermon, and I'm thinking about a million things, and then I realize, you know, we're all dealing with different things, but there are people out there that would go randomly on a website and say, I'm going through a really tough time. I'm stressed out, and I don't know what I need, but I think I need Jesus. And I had her email address, and so I was able to shoot a note back saying, hey, I don't know where you are. I'm not sure what all you're going through, but I tell you, I pastor a church that I know if you wanted to come around, we would love to have you come our way, and we'll try to take some of that burden off of you, and we'll try to help you as you're going through a tough time. And I felt confident that I could say, hey, you're stressed out, and you're anxious, and you're struggling. I said, come our way. Come meet some of these people that I know, and they'll show you some love, and they'll show you some support.
Thank you for listening to the New Life broadcast brought to you by the Emmanuel Baptist Church. Emmanuel is located at 1710 23rd Street near the City Park in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Our website is www.ebcwv.com. I'm Pastor Kurt Busick. We leave you with this important word from the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave us his only Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. God bless you and have a great Sunday.